It's the All Songs Considered Plus One podcast. I'm Bob Boylan. On the Plus One podcast, we try to focus on one issue, maybe one record. And today, it's a new album by Amanda Palmer and her father, Jack. When I first heard this record of cover songs, I thought, how sweet. They probably sang many of these songs together long ago. And then I discovered how wrong I was. And you know what? It made the album only sweeter. The story goes more like this. Amanda's mom and dad separated when she was just about a year old. She saw her father only on occasion. Amanda became a popular and provocative artist, both with the Dresden Dolls and her many other projects. Her dad lives in Washington, D.C. She'd come visit when she was on tour. And he sings in a church choir at St. David's. He also plays guitar, an old Martin guitar that he's had much of his life. One night years ago, when Amanda was playing at the 930 Club, Jack joined Amanda on stage to sing a Leonard Cohen song, an artist they share a common bond with. And that was the beginning of a new relationship, a relationship that became an album and opens with a song by Leonard Cohen, the title track. It's called You Got Me Singin'.
You got me singin', even though the news is bad. You got me singin', the only song I ever had. You got me singin', ever since the river died. You got me thinking of places we could hide. You got me singing, even though the world is gone. You got me thinking, I'd like to carry on. You got me singing, even though it all looks grim. You got me singing the hallelujah hymn.
So you can see why I got this all wrong, because it is pretty sweet. It didn't sound like you've been doing this for a while. But tell me, Jack or Amanda, how this came to be and how wrong I am.
Well, the short story is when I started solo touring after the Dresden Dolls in around 2008 or 9, I started inviting my dad up onto stage to play some cover songs. And you know, we didn't have some long storied family musical history. We didn't actually know each other all that well when I was growing up. My parents got divorced when I was one, and I would occasionally visit my dad, but we didn't play a lot of music together. I mean, I knew he was a musician, and I knew he sang, and I knew he had a guitar, but it's not like I would go visit my dad and we would like strike up the campfire and sit around singing Bob Dylan songs together. So yeah, when I started solo touring, a big part of what I loved doing was inviting my friends, whether they were pro musicians or amateur musicians or my family or whatever, onto stage with me to share the experience. And I was kind of nervous to ask my dad. I don't even remember the first time I actually did it. Do you remember that? What happened?
It might have been here, actually.
In D.C.?
In D.C., yeah.
What club do you remember? Would it have been?
Probably the 930 Club.
Probably the club you're playing this evening, yeah. This is a Leonard Cohen tune. This whole album is a selection of tunes that you both love for one reason or another that are all covers. Was Leonard Cohen a connecting point?
It's the biggest piece of the Venn diagram, for sure.
Yeah, because the first song we did together was a Leonard Cohen cover. And either the next time or maybe the time after that, we did another Leonard cover.
Yeah, it was safe. You know, one of my big things in my band was couch surfing. We always tried to stay with our friends or our family or our fans most of the time. And D.C., we were playing a lot. We were a Boston band, so mm-hmm. we were constantly touring down to, you know, down the Eastern Seaboard. And my dad lived in D.C., so we always stayed at his house. And I think, you know, starting in 2003 or 4, probably. And I think, you know, being able to hang out with my dad and have breakfast with him and have a glass of wine at the end of the night was kind of what started to build our relationship into an actual adult friendship. Mm-hmm. And I would look through his CD collection, too.
Ah.
I saw the Leonard Cohen CDs, and I was like, that's awesome. My dad is cool. He has all these Leonard Cohen CDs.
You would have been how old when in the 60s when Cohen was putting out his early
His early works.
Were you a teen or early 20s?
I was college.
Yeah, college age. And that stuff was pretty striking, right?
Yeah.
There's no one who sang like him.
Right, and that's still true.
And that's still, that's right. It just, like we joke here, sometimes we think Leonard Cohen at some point as he ages will get so subsonic that we won't even hear him. There'll just be an album that'll come out and you'll just put it on and you won't.
Right. But we'll have really wonderful feelings about it. Yeah.
And was he an inspiration to play, or were you playing guitar is what you play, right?
Yes, guitar. And I'd been playing guitar before I learned about Leonard or heard him for the first time. But like millions of other people, he just blew me away, still does. Mm-hmm. And his songs have any number of attributes, but one of them from a musician's standpoint is that they're really accessible.
Mm-hmm. How do you mean that?
They're easy to learn. Oh, okay. and up to a point, they're easy to play. He does some things increasingly now with more complex instrumentation, but pretty much anybody can sit down and knock off at least a reasonably passable version of Suzanne.
Uh-huh.
It's not hard to learn You Got Me Singing.
Right.
It's a folk song.
Yeah, indeed. And you've got a voice that you've got that bottomy. I'm doing hand gestures here.
Yeah.
Which made it probably
he's attractive gotten all
to you.
Of these Johnny Cash comparisons, which of course makes me very proud. you could do way worse.
Well, the album that you've done is a compilation of music that is from that time period in the 1960s, but then you also get someone like Kimya Dawson. Mm-hmm. It's something that's more modern. I'm thinking who the
John Grant.
John Grant, which is an incredible song. We may talk about Glacier
and Sinead O'Connor. In the middle.
That's right. And what I love about this record is that I'm going to say that most people who hear this record who are probably under 35 probably don't know but two songs on this record, maybe three, maybe the John Grant, maybe the Sinead record song.
Yeah.
And so I love the fact that...
Well, we did that on purpose.
That's good. You turn people on and...
Yeah. Well,
what is new music?
If you're going to do a covers record, I mean, you have all of a sudden you have every song in the world to choose from, and I feel like doing covers records is dicey because it's wonderful to share music and get into the continuum of music, but it's also a heavier responsibility because there you are with your megaphone and your spotlight deciding what to pass, what to pay forward, basically. And we could have done a covers record of songs by The Doors and The Beatles and The Who and Janis Joplin, but that music already has an audience. The song by Noah Britton, this like songwriter who probably no one has heard of from Boston, and even Kimya Dawson, like people know her, but she's not huge, we're not playing standards. And I mean, I think there's a place for that, and I think it would be great to go out and do like a, covers record of standards and stuff. But also, I wanted to share these songs. I heard that John Grant song, that I forget. I think I heard it the first time I listened to that record a couple years ago, and I was just like, why doesn't everybody know this song? Mm-hmm. This is such a good song. It's so.
Want to play
important.
A bit of Glacier?
Yeah.
Amanda introduced me to Glacier, and I'm. Embarrassed to say John Grant as well, because he is just a phenomenal, phenomenal songwriter.
And you hadn't known him before.
And I hadn't known him before. Somewhat of a diversion. One of the joys of doing this album with Amanda was the time we spent in the months, and it might have been over a year before we actually walked into the studio, throwing songs back and forth and saying, oh, what about this? I love this song. Oh, well, that's a great song, but what about this? And have you heard of John Grant? No, gee, well, take a listen to Glacier. And my reaction was exactly like Amanda's. It just flattened me. Mm-hmm. It's fairly low key, but it's an amazingly powerful plea for understanding, and something that is so desperately needed in the world today.
In this case, the differences between people in this case, in yes. particular with John and being gay and not
right.
being accepted and
right.
trying to deal with that. Let's play a little of Glacier. It's 7 minutes long. I won't play the whole thing, but everyone needs to just spend like the 7 minutes with their phones turned off and in a darkened room and listen
yeah,
to this
listen
song.
To it.
It really is remarkable.
Just want to live your life the best way you know how, but they keep on telling you that you are not allowed. They say you are sick, that you should hang your head in shame. They are pointing fingers and want you take the blame.
There are days when people are so nasty and convincing. They say things beyond belief that sting and leave you wincing. And to boot, they say their words come straight down from above, and they really see what they're doing counts as love.
This pain, it is a glacier moving through you. Carving out deep valleys spectacular landscapes, nourishing the ground with precious minerals and other stuff. So don't you become paralyzed with fear when things seem particularly rough.
And other stuff.
I love that lyric so much. I can imagine John sitting at his piano and writing this beautiful hymn and going like, man, what am I going to put there? Fuck it. I'm just going to say other stuff. And in that's sort of one of the things I love about that is he's kind of in Leonard Cohen lineage. Like, this song sounds so timeless and poetic, and yet he inserts a little bit of like waving his hands going like, no, I'm just John Grant, this hilarious human being who knows what I'm doing and I know you're listening. And it's not pretentious. It's
right.
just this human.
He's an incredibly sincere and funny
totally.
Performer too.
Yeah.
There's a couple of covers that will go older now. And I'm going to play this Phil Oakes tune. Phil Oakes is probably, again, someone, Jack, that you grew up on.
Yeah.
And did you know this song, Amanda? In the Heat of the Summer.
No, I didn't even know who Phil Oakes was,
wow.
much
here,
to my embarrassment.
Yeah.
But I also, I mean, at 40 years old now and having heard a lot of music and played and covered a lot of music, I now have a no shame policy about music I haven't heard of. And I don't think anyone should. I think there's so much music.
That's it.
And you can only look at it with an open mind that any music you haven't heard, you should never feel guilty. Just let it in. And I mean, I got to go down a little Phil Oakes YouTube hole the night that that I got that link from my dad. And his Phil Oakes' story is actually kind of tragic. He, you know, I won't get into it now, but he, you know, he's sort of, he died early.
Yeah, of suicide. He had...
He died of suicide.
Yeah.
Oy.
He was a suicide. But he was one of the, I think, most popular young, sort of angry folk song writers and singers in the era of Dylan and Joan Baez in the late 50s, 60s.
In the era where people would take the events of the day and turn them into story songs.
Absolutely. Phil wrote In the Heat of the Summer in response to the riots in Harlem in 1964. And I loved the song when I first heard it. It was on, I think, his first or second album. I added it to my repertoire. And fast forward 50 years. oh, God. and tragically, the events of the day are too reminiscent of what was going on then. And so the song, which was topical then, remains topical. And I suppose you could say that, well, that's one of the signs of a good folk song, that it continues to live and continues to be relevant.
A good song or a really depressing society.
There you go.
or both.
or both.
Let's play a little of In the Heat of the Summer.
In the heat of the summer, while the pavements were burning, the soul of a city was ravaged in the night after the evening sun was sinking. No need to ask how it started, why the windows were shattered. Another black kid face down in the road whose life did not seem to matter. Down the street they were rumbling, all the tempers were raging. Oh, where were the white silver tongues who forgot to listen to the warning? Coming, bricks and bottles were flying, and the loudspeaker drowned like a whispering sound compared to the angered emotion.
You took some liberty, Jack, on this song a bit with the lyrics, right? Or someone did. Changed them a bit.
Just a bit. In the second verse, the original lyrics are, no need to ask how it started, why the windows were shattered, but deep in the dark someone set a spark, and then it no longer mattered. And it seemed to me it was an easy update to change it to the way we recorded it, which was no need to ask why it started, why the windows were shattered, another black kid face down in the road whose life did not seem to matter.
You know, I think about music and I think about politics, and I was a teen in the days of Phil Oakes, and it mattered to me. It felt like we as a generation were raising red flags and screaming about the injustice and things that needed to change. And I'm wondering, can song still do that?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen that in my music and the music of the Dresden Dolls and the songs that we choose to cover when we choose to cover them. Music does a thing that nothing else does. And I grew up and still, like, you know, hang on to this sort of, like, angry regret that I didn't grow up in the 60s, you know, when protest music and you know, music is a real way of life and, you know, the excitement of all that. But especially in the Dresden Dolls, me and Brian were always like, you know, those were their times and these are our times. And music We see it when we're standing on stage and when we see people out there and we sign at the end of shows and we hold people in our arms who cry and weep and say, "The song changed my life." Music never has to feel less powerful. And I mean, I think the way music has changed and the way it's gotten more commercialized and, you know, about other things, it doesn't touch the core. The core stays the same. If you write a good, powerful song like Glacier or like the songs that I've written that, seem to get into the heart of your listener, everything else falls away. It doesn't matter.
For me, the answer to your question would be, if music has lost its ability to do that, we're just doomed. So I agree with Amanda. Music has a unique ability to communicate. As a writer, as a musician, you can choose from an incredible range of things to communicate, as you can when you sit down to talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. So the question of what you choose to communicate is a whole separate issue. But music gets an idea across in a way that nothing else that I know of can, and it can be incredibly powerful.
So in some ways it would be the failing of the artist, not the actual form, not the song form. But if it's not striking and it's not uniting and it's not...
Well, but, you know, music's also a mirror. And I mean, you can be as passionate and protesty as you want, but also sometimes just the act of pointing at something, the act of putting words to a feeling without any moralizing, mm-hmm. without any commentary, without any extra stuff, sometimes I feel like that's our most important job. Your poet can only warn quote would be great here.
Wilfred Owen, English poet who was a soldier in the First World War, wrote incredibly powerful poems, some of them about his experiences in the First World War, was actually killed in combat 3 days before the cessation of hostilities. And his quote is, "All a poet can do today is warn." That quote was picked up by Benjamin Britten and inscribed on the cover page of War Requiem by Britten.
Great composer.
Great composer. I've had the great pleasure of singing War Requiem a couple of times. But that's what art can do.
A lot of it to me, and this goes a little bit off topic, but a lot of this is so much also about what songs do we choose to sing when we decide to just pick up a guitar and sit down and in an actual room of people mm-hmm. play music. And I mean, my dad and I are about to go on a 5-date tour, and I don't really believe in coincidences. The fact that the news is what it is today and yesterday and last week, to be able to think that this album and these songs are just a little bit of a balm on what feels like such a catastrophic time. It's like our teeny little Band-Aid on the Niagara Falls of the news right now. But it is, you know, it's what we can contribute, is to just sit down and make music.
And to think that the song, the Phil Oak song, is, we'll call it 52 years old, maybe, if my math is right.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And then the Sinead O'Connor song, which is what
86.
Song?
86.
Which is Black...
Black Boys on Mopeds.
On Mopeds. I certainly feel and see that from as a teen in the 60s to now, that there's things that are better, and that makes me feel good that the uniting that music had and the movement that it started made a change. But certainly it made a dent of a change in a massive, massive problem, and
we've got a long way to go.
Yeah. On the lighter note, the cover of this record, the artwork on this record, has really just had me. It isn't much anymore that you pick up a record and hold it and look at it and and Bringing It All Back Home by Bob Dylan, the record that came out, fifth record, and came out maybe about the same year, 65? That record in the early 60s that I used to hold in my hand, I would stare at all the time because it was Dylan and this woman who I didn't know who she was, but she was like his manager, Albert Grossman's wife or girlfriend.
Sally Grossman, his wife.
His wife. And then, but laying on the table were all these little things that you could look at. You know, there was a Dylan record. There was Time magazine. There were just signs of the time. Dylan was holding a cat. This record cover must have meant a lot to you, Jack. I don't know if it did to you, Amanda, but you recreated this record cover in your own inimitable way. Can you describe what you did? Because this isn't like you got a stage studio and made this. You literally went to the
remain undisclosed. We had access to this house, to this room, and we recreated the entire album cover, including a lot of the original objects. So, you know, this painting and this weird little statue and the same couch.
The Lord Buckley album on the mantles.
And we substituted the cat with a baby. And I just thought it would be a really fun, sort of a silly idea, but also, you know, the album feels very 60s through now. And so it felt like it would be fun to do the cover as it's sort of an homage and a time capsule too.
And in a way, the fact that you two had separated, really didn't know one another the way you seem to be getting to know one another now, is sort of bringing it all back home in a beautiful way, and which is the name of the Dylan cover that you've recreated. And I love that so very much. If it's okay, I'd like to go out on one song that I didn't know this artist at all, the last song on the record.
Oh, yeah.
It's just the sweetest of sentiments. Can you tell us about the composer and the song?
With great pleasure. So this guy is named Noah Breton. He's from Boston. He's autistic and just one of the most beautiful, honest, crazy, wonderful songwriters I've ever gotten to see live. He's also in a sketch comedy troupe called Asperger's Are Us, and they're on tour right now.
Wow.
And they actually happen to be in D.C., but Noah's going to be guesting with us tonight at the 9:30.
Oh, that's terrific.
And he writes the most blazingly uncomfortable, honest songs you've ever heard. And this one in particular isn't uncomfortable. It's just so beautiful and sincere in a way that is not sappy and corny and sentimental.
Yeah, I saw the title and I thought, oh, what a cliche title, which is just, I love you so, what is the title?
I love you so much.
So much, yeah.
So he wrote this song on the telephone with one of his best friends, Jen, because I don't know exactly what was going on, but I think he was on tour and he missed her and he was lonely and he called her up and just wrote this song. I think I'm getting the story right, just live on the telephone. And she said, that's really good. You should go lay that down. And
and you heard it how?
I heard him playing it live, and I just thought, this is one of those songs that needs to keep going. And to do it with my dad and to end the album with it just seemed right. I covered the song solo-ish a couple years ago when I was on tour with my band, the Grand Theft Orchestra, and we would bring the lights down every night and make the audience sing along with us. And it sounds like a almost cringy kumbaya moment, but honestly, in the right way, at the right time, especially with what's going on in the world, if you could get past the idea that love is this corny cliche Hallmark concept and is instead the glue that bonds us together and ultimately bigger than any pain and fear that we are encountering. It can be very powerful, especially when you do it in a room of people.
And as you said, the fact that you two are doing this together felt so beautiful. It was the kumbaya moment for me in thinking about you two and having read a little bit about
your separation, your fact that you have a 1 year old now, and which is around the same time that your family split, and mm-hmm. it just.
Well, and I was pregnant when we made this record. I was not just pregnant, I was like pregnant. I was 8 months pregnant. I was in the studio with a giant watermelon belly, and right. Yeah, it all feels very beautifully timed. You know, all of this music, all of these songs kind of like acted like a crowbar to open up the past and make way for the future.
It's beautiful. Thank you both. Thanks
Thank
for doing
you.
This.
Thank you.
Amanda and Jack Palmer, the new record is called You Got Me Singing. I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.
I can't draw, and I can't paint. I can't write. I'll never be a saint. But I can sing. And I can say, I love you so much. I love you so. Your favorite philosophies.